The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This episode of the America First podcast with me, Sebastian Gorka, is brought to you by Franklin Armory. Shop freedom, quality, and innovation at franklinarmory.com. Franklin Armory, we are facilitators of freedom. Welcome, dear friends, to America First One-on-One. When you look at our movement, you look at the conservative movement writ large, it's a very interesting question to posit. Who do we owe the most to? Is it the founders, the first activists of the Tea Party movement? Is it the spirit of the Gipper, Dutch Ronald Reagan? Is it the late, great Rush Limbaugh? Or could it be an incredibly iconoclastic individual who loved his BlackBerry and taught us what it means to be a fighter? I'm going to go with putting Andrew Breitbart very near the top. Let's just remind ourselves why that is the case.
We have Rush. We have you
Rush
quoting people like suggesting that they're ghostwriters. Do you see how
there's nothing wrong with having? If you've read through my entire book, you didn't read my book. Media Matters read it for you.
Every single point
that you've offered is straight out of George Soros's funded and John Podesta's led Media Matters. You are playing the role of a dupe of John Podesta and Eric Bullard and Media Matters. Every time I appear on MSNBC, or a lot of times, there's Eric Bullard from Media Matters to be right there. Those are talking points straight out of Media Matters.
You and I are having a conversation about truth.
We are.
And
Media
you?
Matters is over there. George Soros is sitting over there, and Bill Ayers is sitting over here.
Martin Bashir being utterly destroyed by the man who taught us so much and who we miss so much, the late, great Andrew Breitbart. And we are delighted. It's a rare occasion to have him in studio for a full one-on-one. He is the Washington Bureau Chief for that empire that Andrew left us. Breitbart.com. Matt Boy, welcome in studio.
Dr. G, always a pleasure. Would not miss the opportunity to be here.
Isn't it great to just always refresh ourselves as to how special Andrew was and how fearless he was?
I highly recommend that everybody out there go and spend an afternoon and go look up all of Andrew Breitbart's old speeches and interviews like that one, because there's so many great moments, and there's things that, like, I'll do it occasionally, like every, you know, couple months or so, I'll go back and look at them, and there's just things that, like, I totally forgot about 10 years later, that, you know, these moments where he would just go off on somebody or, like, expose things. Andrew, just absolutely incredible. So
right. I want to talk about what's happening right now in politics. You're here in D.C. for some very special meetings. We have to talk about the midterms. We have to talk about what's happening with a certain piece of legislation that a certain senator signed on to last week that got a lot of people in the Breitbart community very, very irate. But if you'll indulge me, because we have the luxury of a little bit longer together.
Sure.
You've been at Breitbart how long?
10 years now.
Okay, 10 years. Yep. Tell us a little bit about what Breitbart means to you as a journalist and a conservative. And for those who aren't familiar with Andrew, I worked for Breitbart. You know, I was the national security editor before I joined the Trump administration, but I never got to meet him. So why is he so different? I think one thing is fearlessness, but you tell our listeners and our viewers.
It wasn't just fearlessness. Yes, it was fearlessness, and we see a lot of that across the conservative movement now. A lot of people out there being fighters. Obviously, Donald Trump is probably the preeminent example of that. But it's not just the fearlessness. He was downright funny too. Like, if you ever hung out with Andrew, Like, and I would do it. Like, I never actually worked at Breitbart when he was alive. He always tried to convince me to come over. I worked for Tucker Carlson at Daily Caller. Yeah, so Tucker was my first editor. I've been blessed to have some great mentors. So I got to know Andrew Breitbart really well when I worked there.
So you knew him while you were
yes,
at the Caller.
Yes, and it totally changed my life, right? Changed my perspective on things.
Why? Tell us why. What was special about his perspective?
He approached it from... So I was in journalism school. I was getting a master's degree when I met Andrew Breitbart. So I was freelancing and working part-time for Daily Caller while I was going to American University for a master's degree in journalism. And then this was during the Tea Party movement in 2010, and I was doing a story for the Daily Caller on bias against conservatives by the left media at these Tea Party rallies, where they were going out and interviewing people and then selectively editing them and deceptively editing the videos to make conservatives at these rallies, the good people that were going out to these Tea Party rallies, make them look like racists. And so I was looking for somebody to talk to, and I think it was Tucker who recommended. I reached out to this guy, Andrew Breitbart. I'd never heard of him before. So I sent him this big, long, you know, well thought through press request email, like, you know, and I went through the journalism training that, like, you're supposed to act like you're objective and you're supposed to this, that, and the other. Andrew and I started talking about this and about the flaws in the industry. And it was him who I think convinced it was among other people, but it was him, Tucker, a few others that convinced me that the biggest flaw in the media industry, that you see this across the board in New York Times, The Washington Post, et cetera, is that they claim to be objective. Yeah. There's no such thing as objectivity. And frankly, a lot of the bias that you see inserted into the media is unintended.
They don't know how biased
they don't are. Even know. Like, because look, we're all human beings. Everything, every decision we make, we are not robots, yeah. Okay? Every decision we make, from which stories we cover to which ones we don't, to who we interview to who we don't, to which quotes we include to which ones we don't, to how we frame the article, to what we make the headline, to what we don't put in the story, all has the opportunity for the insertion of bias, intended or not. And some of them do it on purpose. Some of them... I really think that it's just an inherent flaw in the industry. So we approached things differently. We tried to, Andrew and I talked about it repeatedly. We were going to, the goal was to make a news organization that does it right, that's open and honest with our audience about what it is that we believe in. If you read Breitbart, you know where we stand.
Right? Well, it's the difference between Tucker Carlson, who says, I'm a patriot, I love America, and somebody like Don Lemon, who says, I'm a journalist, but he trashes conservatives.
Right.
That's the difference.
If Don Lemon was just honest with his audience, and if Maggie Haberman at the New York Times, and if, you know, the rest of the New York Times staff, and the whole MSNBC, if all of them, all of these different anchors and reporters and everybody just were open and honest about what it is that they believe, who they support, what they're voting for, who they're voting for, what the stance that they have on various issues, their life history, etc., and where they come down, I think we'd be a lot better place as a media and as an industry. But we're, you know, when you see all this debate that's happening right now about all the journalism industries and strife in need of a bailout and all this stuff, well, yeah, they're in strife because they built on a lie, right? Like, they're built on a lie that people can somehow be robots and be objective. We are not robots. We are people. All of our life experiences and beliefs and everything that we've learned over the course of our, you know, to where we've gotten to where we are today. I mean, look, the work that I've done at Breitbart for 10 years informs the work that I do now, right? Like, the work that I did, the people that I've met growing up along the way, family members, all sorts of different things, they inform who I am. And if I'm open and honest about that with my audience, I feel like that helps me gain their trust. And you know, and I hear it all the time from people around the country that they trust us because we're straight shooters and we are honest with people about where it is that we come down. By the way, I hear from people on the left who feel like that, right? Like, there is a growing group of people on the left, and I hope that one day we're going to get to a place where these failed institutions like the New York Times and the Washington Post and CNN, et cetera, just come out and admit it. Admit that you're Democrats.
Do you think that could ever happen, Matt?
I think that it's going to have to happen. Otherwise, they're all going to go out of business. Look, you see CNN right now totally imploding, and they're trying to reshuffle the deck chairs on the deck of the Titanic. But it's still the deck of the Titanic unless they change that operating problem, that core institutional issue at somewhere like CNN, which is that they claim to be objective. There's no such thing. It's a lie.
But if you look, and I'm getting into the weeds here, but if you look at the Washington Post, which is a vanity project for Bezos,
right.
If you look CNN's website, which is really the thing that financially keeps this disaster of a TV channel going, there doesn't seem to be any economic pressure. Could they do this forever? Could they just lie to their viewers forever?
The big ones probably can. So the CNNs and the Washington Post, the ones that are funded by billionaires, but the little ones out there around the country can't. And that's why you're seeing, I mean, you mentioned the thing with the certain senator, right? Like in the legislation.
We'll talk about that in
we'll
a
get
second.
To that later, but that's all about the local news outlets. So the big, the mid-city newspapers like the Miami Herald, they can't keep the sham going, right? The Dallas Morning News can't keep the sham going, right? Like, and so these mid-city newspapers, so that's what's happening right now is you're starting to see the establishment media's lower roots starting to, the New York Times can probably keep the sham going for the rest of our lives. The CNN probably can. The Washington Post probably can, but the rest of them can't. And that's the problem, is that if the rest of them have to start changing and addressing these core issues that we're talking about, rather than getting a bailout from the government, then the big ones are going to have to, the lie is going to be called out for them too.
We'll talk about latest developments in that sector, and especially with regards to a certain conservative senator last week. Next here on America First, long form one-on-one with Matthew Boyle, who is the Washington Bureau Chief for Breitbart.com. Bookmark them at Breitbart.com and follow him, because if I say so myself, it's thanks to me that he's back on social media. At Truth Social, it's Real Matt Boyle, Real Matt Boyle. Don't forget to follow us. Never miss an episode. Go to Spotify, plug in my name, Sebastian Gorka, America First. Subscribe. It's absolutely free. Write us a 5-star review. It does help with those dastardly algorithms. And of course, share the links. And don't forget the merch store, where you can get your America First challenge coins, your Stay Frosty patches, your The FBI is Biden's Gestapo. Go today at SebGorkaStore.com. That's SebGorka, SebGorkaStore.com. Whether it's the regular Hellcat or whether it's the compensated RDP with that miniature red dot, I love them all. How did it take so long to invent a factory compensated subcompact 9mm? Well, guess what? Springfield did it, and I'm a huge fan, and I'm Sebastian Gorka.
The Hellcat from Springfield Armory is still the smallest, highest-capacity micro-compact in the world. Available in standard or optics-ready configurations, the class-leading capacity of the Hellcat gives you 11+1 with the standard magazine and 13+1 with the included extended mag. The definitive concealed carry pistol is here. The Hellcat from Springfield Armory gives you the capacity to defend.
In 2015, I tried to commit suicide. I tried to take my own life. I took a bunch of pills and tried to drive off a cliff. By 2023, we will have more deaths by suicide than we will post 9/11 combat.
Babe is referring to a report out just this summer that estimates that since 9/11, we've lost more active duty personnel and veterans to suicide than those actually killed in combat.
Every suicide is a tragedy, all the more so when it's a combat veteran. We now have more who've committed suicide than have died in combat since 9/11. What on earth are we going to do about it? What can you do about it? There's one organization founded by combat veterans that is there to help and try and stop these brave men and women from making that decision. It's called Mighty Oaks. They have a series of ranches across the country where veterans, active duty service members and their families can go to deal with their trauma, psychological pain, the PTSD, and find some tranquility. It costs $2,500 per veteran to send them to a ranch. They aren't charged a penny. Will you donate today to help those who have given so much for us and who stand on the wall to protect us? if you will, if you're prepared to, if you're a veteran who wants to help your fellow brothers in arms, please go to my website, sebgorka.com, and click on the Mighty Oaks banner at the top. You'll see a picture of me and Shad Robichaud, former Force Recon Marine, and it says Restore Our Warriors. Give $100, give $1,000, give as much as you can, because they deserve our support. Let's get that horrific number, 22 a day committing suicide amongst our veterans, as close down to zero as we can with your help. Let's go, please, today. Support them at sebgorka.com, S-E-B-G-O-R-K-A, sebgorka.com, and then click on the Restore Our Warriors banner at the top. We are back with Matt Boyle. He is the Washington Bureau Chief for the Breitbart.com website, the most influential conservative website on the planet. Let's remind everybody why and how it got there. Again, another fabulous clip from the late, great Andrew Breitbart.
Go to hell! No, serious! Go to hell! Go to hell! You've been so rude! You're trying to divide America! Class warfare is not American! Class warfare is not American! And the reason why they hate Sarah Palin isn't because of her human flaws, it's because how effective she is. It's how effective she's been in calling out the community organizer in chief, Barack Obama.
He's telling Barack Obama to go to hell, and we don't coordinate our clips. We don't approve them with our guests in advance. And he's whispering. Matt's going, is that Wisconsin? I think I was there. I think I was there. I'm glad that clip is from a place that you may have been there with
I'm not sure. That one was from.
We'll find out. It doesn't matter. It's a good story. We'll say you were there. Yeah. But here's my question to you. Yeah. Because I get this a lot. I get this from members of my family. Like, can't you be nicer? Can't you be more polite? Andrew was the example of, no, go to hell. If you're trying to destroy political opponents, if you're trying to destroy America, enough of the rhino, ooh, we've got to be polite, Marquess of Queensbury. Where do you stand on that, Matt, when it comes to being a political actor?
I think that we should, you know, certain times it calls for being very aggressive and not so polite. Other times it calls for being polite. It depends on the circumstance.
But the idea that we always have to be nice the other side is, you know, using the FBI to SWAT our homes.
Right. When the other side would like to see us all arrested and put in jail and destroyed and all of us homeless and unemployed, which is what they want. You have to understand that, look, how do you fight fire? You fight fire with fire, right? Like, and so the fact is, now look, there's some times when, I'm more of a situational thing, right? Like, so there's times when it calls for the scalpel, there are times when it calls for the sledgehammer, and believe me, I've used both many times over the course of the 10 years I've been at Breitbart. But the point is that you have to understand that the other side's out for blood. I mean, they're trying to destroy us. And you hear it every day from Joe Biden. You hear it every day from Barack Obama. You hear it every day from Merrick Garland.
When they say half the nation are fascists in a clear and present danger, the idea that we have to be polite is kind of asinine. Let's talk about a moment last week when your blood did get a little bit heated. Talk to us about certain legislation concerning social media and what Senator Cruz did last week and why it's so dangerous.
Right. So there's a proposal that Amy Klobuchar, Democrat who ran for president and fully intends to run for president again, senator from Minnesota, has been pushing. It's called the Journalism Competition and Preservation Act. Now, what it would do is it would create an antitrust exemption to allow media companies to band together to collectively bargain so that they can group together and force big tech, Facebook and Google, to pay for the content that they carry on their platform. Now, that sounds good, except here's the problem. There are no provisions in the legislation, something that would be called a favored nations clause, that would make it such that the deal that is the best deal negotiated between a group of media companies would apply to everybody. Meaning smaller companies and conservative media, et cetera. So what I'm getting at here is that the way that this would work out is that the big establishment media outlets, the big city newspapers that I was talking about before, like the Miami Herald, the Dallas Morning News, et cetera, they'd all get together and make their own little deal with Facebook and Google outside the law, because, again, it would create a antitrust exemption, which, by the way, every time we see an antitrust exemption, Major League Baseball is a really good example of this. It never works out so well. No. But they would make their own deal, and it would exclude the rest of us from it. Senator Cruz, this bill was dead. It was dead multiple times over the course of the last year and a half, and it's one of the few things of the Democrats proposed that the Democrats have proposed this Congress that we've been able to crush. Senator Cruz revived it in Senate Judiciary Committee last week.
Any idea why the hell he'd help out Klobuchar and the big media?
Well, it gets to the answer of, again, Klobuchar, who fully intends to run for president again. Who are the people that really want this legislation? It's the local newspapers that are failing around the country. They want it because they think it's going to lead to them getting bailed out by big tech. So one would think that someone potentially considering running a run for president again, like Senator Cruz has done in the past, would want to appeal to local newspapers around the country in search of editorial board endorsements.
And do you think it is now a done deal? Is this?
I don't think so. I think this thing can be fought, and I think that they don't have the votes for it right now. If they had the votes for it, they passed it out of the Senate Judiciary Committee last week. There were four Republicans who voted for it on the Judiciary Committee. They were included Cruz and then also Senator Kennedy from Louisiana, Senator Lindsey Graham, and Senator Chuck Grassley. They have a few more Republicans who are co-sponsors on it in the Senate, and I think there are senators on the Democrat side who are afraid of it as well because they think it doesn't go far enough in terms of the censorship that are in it. So there are concerns here. If they had the votes for this, they'd have it on the floor already today. They don't have the votes for it right now. And I think that if people call their senators, I think Senator Cynthia Loomis in particular from Wyoming needs to hear from people. And if they call their senators and they tell them they don't like this, I don't think that they're going to be able to get the votes to get it through. Watch the lame duck after the election.
Call your senator right now on this bill. I'm Sebastian Gorka. We've got two more years of this insanity left. Are you ready? Do you have a plan B? If it's not just baby formula, if it's food, if you can't get food for your loved ones, do what I did. Go with the biggest emergency food supply and the best in America, My Patriot Supply. If you use my link, you will get $250 off their three-month supply. Never be in a position where you can't feed your loved ones, your children, or your grandchildren. That's preparewithgorka.com, $250 off a three-month supply. That's preparewithgorka.com. MyPillow is having their biggest sheet sale of the year. You all have helped build MyPillow into the amazing company that it is today. Now, Mike Lindell, my buddy, the inventor and CEO, wants to give back to my listeners. The Percal bed sheet set is available in a variety of colors and sizes, and they're on sale. For example, the queen size is regularly $89.98, but now for you, just $39.98 with your listener promo. Order now, because when they're gone, they're gone. The Percal sheets are breathable and have a cool, crisp feel. They come with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Don't miss out on this incredible offer. It's a limited supply, so be sure to order now. Call 1-800-829-8468, promo code Gorka, or just go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, and plug in G-O-R-K-A. That's 1-800-829-8468 or MyPillow.com, code Gorka. Matt, can I get a little bit technical to talk about you
sure.
for a second?
Sure.
Because you are one of the rare breed. You're young. You're not yep. one of, you're not, you know, one of
I'm
these.
Getting up there, though. I just
no,
turned 35.
Let me just say you're young. You're still young. But you're yeah. right. You still dedicate a lot of your journalistic work to something that is basically dead in journalism, which is long-form pieces. Mm-hmm. You will take an issue, whatever it is, and you will dive into it for weeks or months, and then you'll drop a 1,000, 2,000, 3,000-word piece. Why? I love it. I think that's what, you know, real journalism has to include. How does that drive you? Why do you do that? Why does Alex Marlowe, the editor-in-chief of Breitbart, give you that room for maneuver? Because you are an oddity in a good way, that you really get down into the nitty-gritty of these issues. Why do you do that, Matt Boyle?
Well, look, I also subscribe to the fact that, because I host a radio show on Saturday
yes.
mornings on
Thank
Sirius,
you.
I do... video stuff out there as well. So I've done some deeper long-form videos over the last couple of years where we did some things with Governor Noem and Kevin McCarthy and Senator Blackburn, among others. But the written word, in my opinion, is still the most powerful thing. I mean, if you put it, I still think that people read for information. I do. I get it that people are out there like all watching these like TikToks and, you know, in social media videos and 30-second videos, but I still think there's a huge number of people out there who are looking for easy-to-digest, readable information. That's frankly, where I get most of my information from is reading. So I read a lot very quickly. I read a lot of articles all across the news. So if you see it in the
news like
today,
President Trump.
I've probably read it.
He,
right?
he always wants stuff printed out, and he wants to read it.
Well, I read it on my phone or on my computer or on my iPad. But like yes, or I'll read it printed out too sometimes. But like yes, but I like to read it, and I think that. And I can digest it very quickly. And I think that a lot of people out there are like that, too. They want to read information. And also, it's permanent, right? Like, well, yes, it's online, but like a print newspaper or something like that is permanent. And I think that it's particularly effective.
It's not a 60-second TikTok.
It's not a 60-second TikTok. Now, look, a 60-second TikTok, also important. Don't get me wrong. I'm not downplaying the other forms of new media that are coming along. I think they're all tools in a toolbox. But the fact is that if you look at this like it's an information war, and that's how we approach things, like that's how Andrew Breitbart taught us to approach things, is that we're in an information war. Each one of these different media are pieces of ammunition, right? So your 60-second TikToks, your radio hits, your social media posts, your articles, all of these things are all different forms of ammunition that you can use to try to achieve the objective that you're trying to achieve. And our objective that we're trying to achieve is we're trying to educate the public and get more and more people on our side and also get our side fired up as well and informed. So what we want to do, so again, we approach this from the perspective of getting back to that original thing that we were talking about, that we understand that there's no such thing as all open and honest about what it is that we believe, and that we believe in a certain worldview, and that worldview is extremely clear if you read Breitbart, and listen to our products, etc. Beyond that, we're taking that information out there in any form that we possibly can to help the public come to our way of thinking and to win that war. And I think that we're closer than we've ever been before to winning the war.
Really?
I do.
All right, I got a question for you on that regard, but just on this social media thing. Mm-hmm. I know it was over 10 years ago and you never worked for him directly, but you knew him very well. Andrew Breitbart had a truly unique preternatural understanding of social media, didn't he? I mean, the way he'd drip a story out, whether it was Acorn or something else, he understood it in ways that most people have no idea.
Right. So Andrew understood social media as a community and also a platform through which you can show what it is that you're doing. Part of the reason why I walked away from Twitter, and I still don't use Twitter. I use True Social now because I think that True Social has stepped into the void of much of what Twitter left behind several years ago. But the reason why I walked away from Twitter is because I think they've gotten away from that original thing that they were doing, which was a platform and an open exchange of ideas. Right. But what Andrew used to do was he would retweet all the people that sent him nasty, hateful stuff to his whole follower list, and what it would do is it would show people just how hateful and nasty and disgusting the left really are.
That's like a Libs of TikTok before TikTok,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly. That's exactly right. What it is. And so Libs of TikTok has basically taken up the mantle of what Andrew's doing. I mean, just literally just showing people how crazy and insane those people are. Helps, I think, rational people come to the realization that we are the winning side. We are the rational side. We are the sane side.
And it's also one of the quickest ways to get suspended on Twitter.
Yes.
If you show the truth of what the left is by simply doing what Libs of TikTok does, God bless her, by taking the insane wokeness of Instagram or TikTok and then putting it on Twitter and just, without comment, just reposting it for the world to see, that gets you in trouble because, you know, the truth gets you in trouble in an insane world. We're talking to Matt Boyle. He is the Washington Bureau Chief for the most influential conservative website out there. It's Breitbart.com. And we're coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Relief Factor, pain relief that works, pain relief that's real, pain relief that is liberal. Half a million Americans right now, me included. But it's not just me. It's people like Yvonne from California. This is Yvonne's story. Both my husband and I are in our 70s and are so grateful to have found Relief Factor. We tried so many other solutions, but none of them have given us the freedom of being pain-free like Relief Factor. Pain-free? Come on, guys. That should be reason enough for you to order the three-week quick setup pack at relieffactor.com. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening like I do. And I promise you, Dr. G's guarantee, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me, Yvonne, and 500,000 of your fellow Americans. Call 800-500-8384 or just go to relieffactor.com. Relieffactor.com.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Right, so a couple of times already we've mentioned the midterms of Matt Boyle. Here's my big question for you as somebody who knows the swamp better than anyone else, who's been following and writing about the politics here for years and years and years. Exciting. Lots of, I mean, what is it? The President Trump is a, what, 150-9 record of endorsements?
Something absurd. I don't know. It's some absurd best ever.
The best ever of any politician.
Best ever times like 1,000. Right. But like, yeah.
So exciting. MAGA candidates, American First candidates crushing it. But here's my big so what. Mm-hmm. Okay, they can win. They can come into the House, come into the Senate, come into state legislatures. But without a change in leadership, because Matt Gaetz isn't going to be the Speaker of the House,
correct.
Right? We're
right.
not going to have a MAGA, right. you know, leader of the Senate.
Right.
So it kind of grinds to a halt after November. Or can America First, with President Trump coming around the corner for 2024, can MAGA success be reflected actually in Congress? What's your prediction?
I think that it's going to very much be reflected in Congress. And so, look, this is a long battle that we've been engaged in. So, yes, we shocked the world when President Trump won the White House in 2016, but the Republican Party hadn't fully changed yet. It was starting to happen a little bit, right? Some of these good guys were winning primaries in 2012 and 2010
yeah,
and 2014.
Early, right.
But it was very early. Right. So this has played out over the course of the last several elections since then, right? So each now it's happened faster in the House than it has in the Senate, and that's just because House elections are every 2 years. Senate elections are every 6 years. But look at the Senate picture, right? Like, look at these new guys that are coming in to the U.S. Senate. J.D. Vance, he is much different than Rob Portman, okay?
Yeah.
Ted Budd, much different than Richard Burr. Eric Schmidt in Missouri, much different than Roy Blunt, who's leaving. So, and the same goes across the board around the country. So it's each election, you want to move the Overton window and move things just a little bit more the right direction and take as much ground as you can and a little bit more than that. We've been seeing that happen in the House. So yes, is Matt Gaetz going to be the Speaker? No, Matt Gaetz is not going to be the Speaker of the House. The Speaker is going to be Kevin McCarthy. But
isn't that a problem? I don't think Kevin is a bad guy, but he's soft.
Well, Kevin was in the past, but Kevin also has to look at the whole Republican conference to get there.
But is he going to reflect it? Is he going to reflect that conference?
I think so. And I think because I think he's going to have to, because if he doesn't, then somebody else is going to step up and beat him. Right. So and I think you're already seeing that happen with him now. So I've gotten to know him pretty well over the last couple of years. And I just did an interview with him last week in Pittsburgh. He's literally laying out, first off, the commitment to America, which they've put forward, which, by the way, I encourage people to go read it. I think it's the boldest Republican plan that we've seen in our lifetime. It's better.
More than a contract with America?
It's
more than
better
Newt
than
Gingrich?
The contract with America. And,
wow.
Yes, and Newt Gingrich himself said that, apparently, to the House Republicans. That's what Elise Stefanik told me in Pittsburgh at their event on last Friday morning. So even Newt Gingrich himself said that. Now, look, the tell is in the immigration part of the commitment to America. They, for the first time ever, the Republican conference in the House of Representatives has formally endorsed E-Verify. So they've backed E-Verify and then cutting off welfare for people not in this country legally.
They've said enough with the Chamber of Commerce, basically.
Yes, and by the way, they've literally openly talked about investigating the Chamber of Commerce. They're going to be going after them on the immigration and on the ESG stuff as well. But what the reason why that's important is if you put those two things together, E-Verify plus the cutting off the welfare, you're cutting off the magnet, the incentive for people to come here illegally and to come streaming through the border. So if you look at that and you look at all these other issues, they talk about they're going to have a select committee on China, which is a huge step in the right direction. They talk about bringing the supply chains back. They talk about hiring more police officers. So overall, you've seen the Republican Party move in the right direction. But also in addition to that, one of the things that I talked with Leader McCarthy about was he laid out how they're going to use spending bill fights. And then he says every means necessary. So they're going to use every means available that they have to them. That's all the must-pass spending bills. And they're going to try to leverage and force Biden's hand. Now, if they've got the Senate as well, there's more things that they can do in that they can send bills to the president and force him to veto them, et cetera. But again, at the end of the day, remember, Biden's still the president right now, so that's going to be hanging over this. So they're going to get, but they're going to do everything they can to get what they can of this agenda in place immediately. And they can stop the bad stuff, a lot of it, right away.
Right. Now, you mentioned Biden. A couple of days ago, kind of seemed he floated like he's not running. Who's going to be the candidate? Is it going to be Hillary? Who's it going to be?
I fully expect Biden's going to be the candidate. Actually.
Really?
So I think Biden, it's tough to take out an incumbent president. It really is.
But after what even Jen Psaki said a few days ago, that he's like a boat anchor for Democrat candidates.
He is, but he's still the president. So unless he goes willingly, which I don't expect him to do, all these other characters who keep stepping forward, the Gavin Newsoms of the world, Kamala Harris, right. The Pritzker from Illinois has been flirting with it. They might run against him, but he's still the president, right? Like, so if he doesn't go step aside willingly, they're going to have a tough time getting rid of him.
And Hillary's not running?
I don't think.
I hope, in my heart of hearts,
that Hillary Clinton runs for president.
Wouldn't it be delicious to have President Trump defeat her again?
Oh, my God. It would be the best thing in the
world. Wouldn't
it? So it would be so great. It would be Hillary Clinton running would be the biggest gift to Republicans, period.
Yeah.
We all pray every day. We wake up every morning. We go to bed every night, and we pray that Hillary Clinton will run for president.
If you're listening, Hillary, please, please run, because we would love to see our old boss destroy, my old boss destroy you again, because you deserve it. I don't know, that TV show, all the interviews in the last few weeks. I don't know, Matt.
I think she's... Look, if Biden falls or something, could I see her stepping up and trying again?
Uh-huh.
Sure. But again, the idea that Biden is going to give it up willingly, I mean, this is a guy who has never done anything but be in office for his entire adult life. What was he, 28 or 29 years old when he was elected to the Senate? I mean, he's been in office for his entire life. Like, he's never done anything but politics. He's a career politician, if there ever was one. He's always wanted this job, the presidency. Why would he ever give it up willingly? He won't. So all this notion of Biden just stepping aside, not going to happen, I don't think. Not very easily. Not as easily as these people think.
All right. He's Matthew Boyle. He goes by Real Matt Boyle on Truth Social. He's on social media again. You got to follow him. You've got to bookmark Breitbart.com, the most influential conservative website on the planet. Oh, by the way, let's put the picture up. You got to read Andrew's book. It is life-changing. I hate autobiographies. This one was life-changing for me. This and J.D. Vance's Hillbilly Elegy. Read this, Righteous Indignation. Subtitle, excuse me while I save the world. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First, coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Relief Factor, pain relief that works, pain relief that's real, pain relief that is liberating 500,000 Americans right now, me included. Yes, me included. But it's not just me. It's people like Debron from Massachusetts. This is Debron's story. I just started taking Relief Factor 4 days ago. My hip pain is gone. I had a horrible time sleeping because of the pain. I absolutely love how I am feeling. Thank you, Relief Factor. Whether it's your hip, your back, your knee, whatever it is, try this product. Order it at relieffactor.com. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening like I do. And I promise you, Dr. G's guarantee, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me, Debron, and 500,000 of your fellow Americans. You've waited long enough. You deserve to know. What have you got to lose? Apart from the pain. Call today, 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com. That number again, 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com. All right, last question for our special in-studio guest, Matt Ball, Bureau Chief, Washington Bureau Chief for Breitbart.com. You went to journalism school here in the swamp. You worked for the Daily Caller. You ended up at Breitbart. You're now the Bureau Chief working at Breitbart.com. What would you say to young people who are insane enough to think of a life in journalism today? What's your advice?
Go for it. Try.
What's your advice?
My advice is go out there and just start doing it, right? So get out there and create a body of work. You can make a blog on your own. Just start writing, right? Start writing. Start making videos. Start doing stuff. But if you go out there and... people are going to notice, right? That's what I did when I first started. So when I was in college and undergrad before I came up here, and I left my grad school program, by the way. I did not graduate from my master's program. I quit in the middle of it. You wanted to get a job. Right. I wanted the job, right? Best decision I ever made, by the way. It was Tucker and Andrew both helped.
Don't worry. I did the same thing at Harvard. I was there for a master's degree. It was so woke, I walked out after a year.
Yeah, totally ridiculous. Walked the stuff they were assigning us was ridiculous. But the point is that just start doing stuff, right? Yeah. When I was in undergrad, I went and interned for free at a local newspaper in Florida, and I wrote dozens of articles for this local newspaper covering everything from the local crime blog to all sorts of different stuff. I did some investigations on different things down there, covered everything possible. Take on as many possible assignments as you can. Write about stuff. Go out there and do it. That's my advice.
And then the future of the field you work in, is it going to become even more fractured? We see what's happening. We love Truth Social, President Trump's platform, Dan Bongino's Rumble. We're on Rumble as well. Then there's Dave Rubin and Locals. Are we going to see a continued bifurcation? Are we going to see little ghettos? Or are we going to see a cleansing moment where journalists get back to journalism in the mainstream as well? What's your prediction?
I hope that journalists get back to journalism. And it's been decades, really, since... I mean, it was in the mid-20th century when they decided to do this whole objectivity lie. So, I mean, that... Until such time as places like the Associated Press and the New York Times and the Washington Post admit their biases, we're not going to get there. So I think you're going to continue to see the power of these new outlets rising on both the right and the left. And by the way, there's some people on the left doing some really good things. I don't agree with their politics, but the people at The Intercept do some great reporting over there, right? That's what you're going to continue to see, I think. You're going to see more and more of that on both sides as time goes on.
In the meantime, if you enjoy shows like ours, support those who make it possible. Great patriots like Mike Lindell. He was stopped, ambushed by the FBI. Why? Because he's a conservative. Let's have his back. Go to MyPillow.com. They've got some amazing BOGO offers. Use my name for up to 66% off. That's MyPillow.com/GORKA. Or you can call them on 800-829-8468. MyPillow.com. Promo code Gorka, GORKA. Dear friends, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, keep your head on a swivel, watch your six, hold the line, never give up, never give in, and stay frosty.
Our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
I have a dream.
Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you, the rest of the world hears you, and the people... And the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And we will make America great again.
Thank you.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
No monologue today. We're going straight in with a very, very important guest. I am incredibly grateful to my good buddy, former Secret Service agent Dan Bongino, for connecting me today with one of a handful of whistleblowers from the Federal Bureau of Investigations, somebody Dan has done two incredible interviews with, Kyle Serafim. Welcome to America First.
Thank you, Dr. Gorka.
Kyle, everybody needs to see the interviews you did with Dan Bongino. We'll post them on all our social media again. You can see them, clips of them on my Instagram, on my Twitter. First things first, how long were you with the Bureau, and why are you a whistleblower?
So I've been with the Bureau for 6 years in June of this year, and I saw a whole bunch of things that were disconcerting. We started off on the interior, like you do, tried to expose things and ask the questions that needed to be asked inside the FBI. But unfortunately, the FBI investigates all of its own misconduct, and the DOJ co-signs on all that as well. So the only way to get that out into the public is to go to Congress, and sometimes it took going something like this as well.
So what are your concrete allegations about the Bureau from which you have now been suspended or you're under? What does your Twitter handle say that you are under permanent suspension? What are you reporting as a whistleblower about your parent agency?
Absolutely. So the allegations that we've made were that the FBI and the leadership of the DOJ hold a very political path in the choice of investigations. And it's a lot like editorial bias, where you choose to cover some stories, you choose not to cover some stories. The types of cases that we're covering are specific, and they are right-leaning potential perpetrators. And a lot of them are trying to meet up with metrics that are predetermined. So whether it's going after parents who simply want to have a say in their children's school, their education, whether it is folks who are veterans who have the Betsy Ross flag, or whether they have the Gadsden flag at their house, or they have the come and take it flag in their gym, the way that I used to. These types of cases are really a crime, really looking for a subject. I'm not sure that they could actually justify that there was any criminal allegations on these, but that doesn't seem to stop the DOJ at this point.
So I'm going to mention three events to you, and I'd like you to comment on each of them. Number one, we have former assistant to the president who has been charged with a misdemeanor of being in contempt of Congress. My former colleague, Peter Navarro, was intercepted by the FBI at Reagan Airport and put in leg shackles before he was taken to the Hoover Building in D.C. By the way, he lives one block from that building, number one. And number two, we have Mark Hauck, a pro-life activist, who likewise was accused of a misdemeanor assault charge that was dismissed in a district court and had his house raided by more than 25 armed FBI agents in front of his wife and his seven children. And then lastly, the idea that the FBI has stated, or the DOJ has stated, that the primary concern is white supremacy in America, not jihadi terrorism. Could you comment on all of those one by one, please?
Sure. As far as your former colleague goes, leg irons in an airport, that's obviously a very, that's an over-the-top move, I would say. He wasn't going to run. I'm pretty confident of that. I'm pretty confident that the young men and women that are involved in the FBI's arrest teams are capable of running down someone. Also, we kind of have a pretty firm policy that if someone like that is going to run, we'll just get him another day. That's not very hard. So that seems very politically motivated to me. I can't speak to it specifically because I wasn't on that case, but it is obviously concerning. And the people inside the FBI that I speak with every day, and there's literally hundreds of them, they have the same concern. They're ongoing. Regarding the pro-life activists in Philadelphia, I have the same concerns. I saw something similar to that in my field office when I was in New Mexico. They had somehow prioritized this enforcement of the FACE Act, which is 18 U.S.C. 248, if my memory serves. And this is the free access clinic. And I've never seen anybody go after anybody for blocking the doors to a church, but we had folks that were questioned and interviewed in New Mexico, where you think there's some bigger national security concerns than whether or not someone is praying on the street outside of an abortion clinic. And then lastly, the white supremacy is It's the FBI's boogeyman. I started seeing it originally in 2017. I got briefings on it from Counterterrorism One at the Washington field office. It was a big priority then. And every time that I went out on a white supremacy surveillance case, and I did a number of them, I couldn't tell you the number, but it's a high number. They all seemed like they were incapable of executing any kind of a threat. They just seemed like maybe they were racist and I wouldn't get along with them, but that's not illegal. And it certainly doesn't warrant the attention of the FBI.
So it seems to me, and I say this with a heavy heart, because before I joined the White House, I'd worked with the FBI for years. I was a trainer for the CTD, for the Counterterrorism Division. Must have trained thousands and thousands of agents and IAs and SOS staff. It seems to me that the Bureau has become politicized. And I'm just shocked that out of a staff of 34, 35,000, we have 18 whistleblowers reporting to the House and I think 13 that have reported to the Senate. Why do so many of your colleagues seem to be okay with being used for political purposes? Do you have any theory, Kyle?
They're very troubled. Most of the people, I get a lot of private messages. I've got folks reaching out to me that are retired and are friends of mine, and I've got folks that I've never met before that have reached out as well. And they're all very troubled with the legacy that the Bureau has decided to shift. And the folks that are in it, a lot of them need this paycheck. They've got, you know, sick parents that they're taking care of. They've got little kids. They don't have a backup plan. And the problem with working for the FBI is that you don't really plan on having a backup plan when you go to work there. It's kind of the job you retire from for most people. And I'm sympathetic to their concerns. I try not to push anybody harder. Everybody has to assume their own level of risk. But there's just several of us that can no longer, you know, abide by the type of the things they were asking us to be engaged in.
Why did you make that decision, Kyle? What was the break point for you to become a whistleblower and to tell the truth publicly? And God bless you for doing it.
Thank you. The primary reason was the COVID vaccine mandates. That really opened a lot of people's eyes, and it does inspire a lot of folks in my group that are talking to me on a daily basis to share information that needs to go. The FBI needs to be aware of it. But they bought in whole hog on the COVID piece. It came directly on the heels of watching the BLM riots that happened all across the country, where I sat in a bunch of them, unfortunately, and they were pretty aggressive. And so when I saw stuff like that happening, and you see it's targeting one-sided, you see that there's the biggest investigation that's ever been opened for January 6th, but we didn't have people that were getting arrested. They were getting arrested and getting walked out. They were being let out of state charges in Portland. Those kind of things were very unsettling to me specifically. So the minute they started pushing, you know, their religious beliefs, which I do think it's a secular religion to get after a lot of this stuff, they wanted the compliance regarding the COVID vaccines, and I wasn't on board with that.
We have 3 million listeners live across the nation on the radio, and then everybody else that watches the video and the podcast streams. How is there any way that they can help you right now, Kyle?
There's a couple of organizations. Most of the folks that I deal with are part of a group called Feds for Medical Freedom, and this is a federal government-wide. This is a group that actually got the injunction on behalf of all federal employees regarding the COVID vaccine. If you have a friend in the FBI and you know who they are, you want to talk to them about it. This is, you know, it's giving them the support. A lot of people are afraid to go forward. They're knowing what it's going to mean for their family. They could end up like they are in my case, where I had to sell my house, moved out, and got rid of the things that I didn't need to hold on to, and I tried to strip down. And, you know, we're on the move. I'm borrowing this office right now.
All right, so I've got it right here, Feds for Medical Freedom. That's Feds, the number 4, medfreedom.org. That's the thing that triggered this man to come out publicly and speak the truth. We need many, many more like Kyle. Please go right now to Feds, the number 4, medfreedom.org. He has been giving lots of interviews. I want to thank very specially Dan Bongino. We're going to pray for you, Kyle Seraphim, and your family. We need more like you. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. If you enjoy this show, we will be posting this segment immediately. Please go to Spotify, plug in my name, Sebastian Gorka, America First. Subscribe. It's absolutely free. And share the link to this interview. Back after these messages.
Talk three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.